Well, Fast Walker is a code word created by NORAD. That's the North American Air Defense Command. We here to classify UFOs, unidentified flying objects, which approach our Earth from space and enter our atmosphere. It's been reported that from its subterranean facility deep inside Cheyenne Mountain, Colorado, the Air Force NORAD facility tracks a rough average of 500 of these fast walkers each year. We'll be back in a moment with our special guest, Robert Miles, and throughout the evening, beginning next half hour, we're going to be bringing in Paula Harris, Alfred Rebra, Dr. Scala, Michael Scala, Elliot Maynard, and Anthony T. Miles to talk about different episodes as well. That all next on Coast to Coast AM. Robert Miles, he's an experienced author, screenwriter, producer, director, cameraman with more than a 35-year track record of successfully doing business with a number of America's largest, most prestigious entertainment and business corporations. Safe Space, his most recent science fiction novel, which is based upon Robert's own personal extraterrestrial experience. And for more than 22 years, Robert was the president of Miles & Associates, which was an advertising agency, an avid adventurer. Robert designed and built 4 sailing vessels, and he's been to Hawaii, Baja, Mexico, Honduras, and he's our special guest tonight on Coast to Coast. Hello, Robert. How are you?
Hey, George. Thank you for having me on. Great show.
Likewise. Oh, you have done a marvelous job with Fast Walkers. I want to talk with you about all that. These guests that we'll be bringing in starting next half hour with you, a great assortment. How did you, a person who really has a very strong background in entertainment, in science fiction writing, in advertising, how did you get into this field, the field that we're talking about tonight of ufology?
Well, it takes me back into the early 60s and on into the early 70s when I was building a boat and sailing my boat down the California coastline and then on over to Hawaii. And What occurred to me, George, was that I had the most incredible life-changing experience when I was aboard that ship in Honolulu at the Alawai Yacht Harbor. And I had just sold the ship. I had been aboard the vessel for about 2.5 years.
Mm-hmm.
And I had just about done everything you could do in the Hawaiian Islands, sailed to the different islands, met great people, lots of skin diving, surfing, partying, that kind of thing, and our plans to actually sail around the world were beginning to fade with me, and I decided it really wasn't what I wanted to do, and I made a decision to sell the boat. And when I sold the boat, the morning we were to deliver it, I'm an early riser. I'm used to the 4 o'clock watch. I love that early morning watch. And so I woke up early. I went in, got dressed, went out to the main salon kitchen, got at the galley and made some coffee, went back to my bunk. And sitting there, sitting against the back of the headboard, looking out through this beautiful skylight at the breaking day. And then suddenly the most incredible experience happened to me. The whole room began to like tingle and sparkle, and this feeling of energy seemed to engulf me. And this beautiful woman materialized in my stateroom right beside my bed.
This sounds like a dream come true, Robert.
Yeah, and that's what I thought it was. You know, I thought it was a dream or a hallucination, or I felt like it just couldn't be possibly happening. And I looked at her, and you know, when she was in my presence, this incredible energy was just radiating through my entire being. And I said, this can't be real. And she smiled at me and she said, well, it is. And I said, this can't be happening. You can't be real. And she said, I'm real. And I reached out and I physically touched her, George. I touched her. I felt her skin on her arms. And she smiled at me. And I said, well, why are you here? And she said that I'm here because we're friends. And we want you to come to a briefing. And what happened in the next few minutes was almost totally unexplainable in terms of what might be called conventional science. But with the amazing clarity, she helped me to first teleport to New York City. And there I boarded a saucer and took a, what Bob Dean likes to call the 29-cent tour of the local system. And I went to the planet Jupiter. And while I was there, I was given a briefing, and the planet was the most, it was the most incredible radiant energy. And all the time that I was on that planet, I felt that energy, and I communicated with these incredible beings, and they showed me, whether you might call them visions, maybe they were holograms of the future, of what is happening on planet Earth. If we don't change our conditions and our ways, because we have the power to do that, George, as people, as individuals, we do not have to have a calamity, a catastrophic future. We can make that change. And I accepted a mission to come back to this planet, and through the medium of modern communications like your show, and through film and video and media, and thank heavens for the internet, to be able to bring a message of hope to planet Earth. I really believe that there's hope, and I want to communicate to the entire world out there is don't despair. There's hope.
Now, you know, Robert, on this program, we don't judge. We like different views, different ideas, yours, of course, being one of them. But there will be some people who will hear you tonight and say, he went to Jupiter? Oh, tell us a little bit more. Why wasn't he crushed from the force, the gravity, the pressure when he was on that planet? It's uninhabitable. Tell us more. So how do you fight this when people are going to say, okay, this is one heck of a story. He is a great science fiction writer.
Well, first of all, I don't claim to be a technical expert, and that's why in Fast Walkers, the movie, I have created a vehicle for the people who are experts in their field, who've spent their lifetime doing this research and finding out the true answers. I give them a vehicle to speak. And tonight I just want to say that there's physicists out there. And as you know, there's so much talk now, and there's information about the multiverse. And you've had guests on. And also I want to put a big hello to a couple of people, which is an old friend, Hal, and another one, Ingo, and tell them that we need their help. And we need some help with some of this explanation.
Sounds like you're talking about Mr. Putoff and Mr. Swan. Huh?
could be. But these guys have the answers. And to me, what I will say is this. I don't believe a lot of the things that I see and hear. I believe what I personally experienced. And I experienced this. And I know I don't have to believe it. I don't have to take it on faith. I personally experienced being there, and it's my view, and I was shown that there's regular interdimensional travel between this planet and the local system, not just the local system, George, but the entire universe out there. And there's an intergalactic federation, and there's lots of cultures visiting us, and I think Dr. Asala will address some of that, about the different species and the different life forms that are actually visiting us. And
tell me a little bit, Robert, though, about Jupiter itself. And what did it look like when you were there?
Oh, the most incredible place I've ever been. First of all, it was totally radiant. The most colorful fluorescence, oranges, lavenders, pinks, blues, the pastel colors and the energy, George, was just phenomenal. It just totally emanated and radiated through my being. The sea, it was like a silvery kind of, almost like mercury, but I'm not sure that it was. And I was there on the beach, had a kind of a sandy looking beach, except it was more, a little more coarse, and it was. The buildings, the structures were low-profile structures. The people were very human-looking, and it was just the most incredible thing. And as I deboarded from the saucer itself, I looked back, and it was a beautiful beautiful craft, probably three times the size of a 747, you know, to conventional saucer-shaped vehicle. And the planet itself was phenomenal.
At any point, did you see strange-looking beings like the grays that we've, you know, have had described to us before? Or did they all look human-looking?
The individuals that I interacted with were human-looking. There's been many accounts and many witnesses that I've interviewed and talked to who do talk about the grays, but I have not personally experienced any kind of interaction with the grays in a physical form.
Now, when you say that they gave you information about Earth, about the solar system, about the universe, specifically good old planet Earth, what are some of the things you see? What are some of the things, Robert, they told you, and how far out did they tell you things?
Well, this is a subject that I've avoided talking about because, first of all, the story itself is very hard to accept. But tonight I will say this, that planet Earth faces the most cataclysmic and catastrophic changes in the near future. But it doesn't have to happen, but it is happening. You don't have to be a psychic. You don't have to go to Jupiter. All you have to do is hear the facts. And that's the reason that I've invited Alfred Maynard, PhD, to address some of the things that are already happening in our world. And in Al Gore's new documentary, he addresses what's really going on. But what I saw complete devastation. I saw the breakdown of the California coastline coming all the way back, like it's been predicted by, you know, there's other individuals that have drawn maps and things. But I saw the water lines going all the way back to the mountains, and thank heavens we're up here in the beautiful Sholo, Arizona, USA, White Mountains, because we're at 6,500 feet, and the mountains go on up to 12,500, and we're clear up on the top of a rocky plateau. It's safe, and it's beautiful. During the deluge and the breakdown of society, humankind, if they don't change it, if they don't take action, and I mean individual action, one-on-one, we face a world, George, where there's no food, where the energy, the crushing effects of no electricity, no food, disease. I saw it all, and it's real, and it's coming at us like a freight train if we don't take action and do something about it.
Are they going to intercede here, Robert, or merely just tell us about it?
Oh, no. I think that there are those that want to help, but there's also those that want the planet to be destroyed. And in my book, Safe Space, I talk about the fact that the Federation plan was to send a starship and tilt the planet. And if that were to go ahead and occur, then the planet itself, every level of culture and civilization, just like it's happened before, with Atlantis and the other civilizations, it would happen again. And there's those ETs and those beings who have every intention of allowing us to destroy ourselves and even helping us possibly.
Are there others in this Federation who have talked them out of this dastardly idea?
No, they haven't talked them out of it, but there is a group within the Federation. And I like to refer to them as friends that are here to help us. And in my book, it's science fiction, but it's mixed with fact. I talk about the fact that there's part of the old priest Axius. He influences my key guy, Regan Varsh, this Federation commander, to instead of destroying the planet, to come here and help the people of Earth. And you know, I know that there's those that will help us, and that help is occurring right now. I think that what we're doing tonight is part of that help, George. I think you're part of the help, and I want to congratulate you on your new book, and I just want to tell you thank you for being a light worker.
Well, you're welcome there. Now, Fast Walker, of course. Fast Walker's the name of your movie, your feature documentary, is a code word apparently created by NORAD. Explain that.
Well, first of all, there are in existence a lot of technology that the people of Earth do not have access to or even know about. And there's a set of satellites up there, the DSP satellite system, that is able to track these objects that are coming in, and you can call them alien vehicles, you can call them UFOs, call them whatever you want, but they come into our atmosphere, like you said, at least more than one a day. And those satellites send down information called Fastwalker files, and they're kept in NORAD. And there's people out there who know about this, and I invite those people to come on the air. I invite those people to call. You know who you are. You've already bought the Fastwalker tape, okay? And all I can say is that we need this information because the information is there, George, and these files and those objects have been seen. In the Fastwalker film, we show pictures and shadows right on the moon done by Al Tolman. And Al Tolman is a retired aerospace engineer, and his bio is right there on the website. Just click on his picture, and he's standing by. I think he's going to call in tonight. After all, George, Lisa asked that we get him on, and he's very sick.
I don't have his number.
Right.
We've got Paula Harris, Alfred. How does Alfred pronounce his last name? Webery, is it?
Weber. Yeah.
And Dr. Michael Sala, obviously. Elliot Maynard, I have, and yes. Anthony Miles.
Right. And during the break, I'll give you Al's phone number if you'd like.
Okay. We'll do that. And Tommy will get that from you.
Right. Sure.
Well, is the government, you said they're aware, do they try to shoot down these craft at all?
We've had reports of that. Whether I don't know for certain that is the case, but I have heard numerous times in a lot of the interviews that there's a very, very good chance that that the government may announce that there is an alien threat and use the concept of extraterrestrials as a new enemy. And this is what we've got to get away from. We've got to get away from war and fear. And we have to move to hope, George. We have to move to where we as a planet are not killing each other.
If we were more of a peaceful planet, would the Federation start helping us and supporting us?
I'm certain that we would have great support and great help if we were not so destructive and so intent on this war and killing.
What did the craft look like that took you to Jupiter?
Oh, it was beautiful. When I boarded it, it was like walking into a circular lounge area, and I was seated and spoken to by it would be a stewardess in an airplane, but in that it was just another nice-looking lady. There were several other people there in the lounge. I sat down in these nice seats. There were no seat belts. I looked out the window. And it was a porthole-like window, and I could see things going on. Next to me were a couple of digital readouts that were moving at different rates. One were Earth time, another one was Jupiter time. And as we took off, I could watch the Earth moving away from us, and there was no sense of acceleration at all. It was just terrific. And
how long in terms of Earth time do you think it took you to get there, Robert?
I would say it maybe was 6 or 7 minutes. It was very,
that
very
was
quick.
It? Wow. You must have gone through a wormhole?
I wish I knew the answer to that. I'll tell you, my sensation was it was just very pleasant. We were there, and then I walked down down through the gateway and down off of a very comfortable boarding ramp into the incredible energy of Jupiter, and man,
that,
it hit me.
That is something. Stay with us. Paula Harris joins us in the next half hour. Well, incredible story you're hearing from Robert Miles. His websites are linked up at coasttocoastam.com. And when we come right back, along with Robert, investigative researcher into the field of UFOs, Paula Harris joins us. So stand by for that. And welcome back, Robert Miles, our guest. Paula Harris with us as well. Let's go to Paula Harris. Paula, how are you?
Good. How are you? I haven't talked to you in a while.
No, Merry Christmas, Richard C. Hoagland, by the way. And Robin, give you your Christmas wishes as well. He sent me a personal message tonight. Said, please make sure you tell her.
Well, I'm here in the United States this time. I'm here for Christmas in the state of Colorado, which is absolutely beautiful. And I'll be going back to Rome on January 15th.
Well, good for you. Now, give us a very brief synopsis of your background, Paula, for the many new listeners who join us here.
Okay. I'm an international investigative journalist. I work 9 months out of the year out of Rome, Italy, and 3 months here. And I've written a book called Connecting the Dots, Making Sense of the UFO Phenomenon, mainly interviewing military and intelligence people. And the person that I was the closest to after Dr. J. Allen Hynek is Colonel Philip Corso. So I have some insider information that really convinces me beyond a doubt of the reality of the UFO phenomenon and the insider information as to what not only will happen, but about the visitations that have been going on. And this is what I do, and it's on an international level. And they could go to my website, www.paolaharris.it, for more information.
So Robert has been telling us about his far-out story about being taken to Jupiter. What's your thought of that?
Well, see, I didn't know this about Robert when we were doing the documentary. I'm totally fascinated by contactee reports. I'm not very good at it, but I love to listen to the reports because I've never had this kind of experience myself.
It's an incredible story of not only, I think, of mission, but of what could hit us all on planet Earth if we're not careful, which I guess leads us into your views on some of his work, Fast Walkers, for example, your reaction to these visitations.
Well, you know, the amazing thing about Fast Walkers, it's got some amazing people in it. And for the first time, Monsignor Corrado Balducci is in this documentary with me because a lot of it was filmed at Stephen Bassett's ex-conference in Washington, D.C. And we had Stephen Greer, Richard Boylan, Michael Sala, Robert Dean. And Monsignor Balducci is a very important testimony talking about the reality of the UFO phenomenon, that it is not against religion. And he also talks about the fact that he believes that these beings or these entities are here to help us. And I think that that's pretty historic in the film Fast Walkers. My own personal part of the film is talking about the fact that we have had a horrible time handling diversity on planet Earth. And I think we need to set some exopolitical protocols in for the future if we ever meet these people.
Paula, Robert is on the line with us, too. Why don't you chat with him a little bit about his trip to Jupiter? If you're very curious, you as a researcher and investigator, I want to listen to you a little bit.
Well, how are you?
Good, Robert. Great talking to you. You've done an absolutely beautiful job in the documentary. And the first time I heard about your story was inside the documentary, because as you were interviewing all of us, and there's so many of us in this film, you never talked about your experience. And I was really happy to hear that there is a group of people, so-called people and entities other than greys and reptilians, that are interested in our future and possibly in giving us a heads up on what might happen. Are they still communicating with you?
Boy, that's a good one, isn't it? you don't have to pull the punches. Yes, I do have periodic contact.
Oh, you do? Well, good, because this is very important for us. I mean, periodic contact, do you have, like, updates on the situation, or is it always the same?
Oh, Paula.
I know, I'm a tough
person. Always the investigator, right?
It's my job.
Yeah, I know. Hey, what I do want to say is that I want to thank you so much, and also Corrado Balducci, for being in the film and for being a part of the Fast Walker and communicating this message to the people of Earth. And what I will do is say that they are totally aware of what is going on here. In fact, to some degree, they're helping to orchestrate it. And Yes, we will get periodic updates.
I have a little bit of trivia information for you, though, Robert and George. I don't know if you knew that Jacques Vallée wrote a book called Fast Walker some time ago. And he wrote it as science fiction also. It is a totally amazing book because it talks about extraterrestrial technology at Area 51.
Mm-hmm.
And it talks about this very thing. And so this idea of Fast Walkers, I had read the book 2 years ago, thanks to Richard Hoagland, who gives me all my books to read. And I had learned about this and the fact that sometimes through the medium of science fiction, we get science fact and we get some of the truth.
Well, there's no doubt about that. And in this particular case, this is a fascinating story that Robert brings us. And, of course, all of your work, Paula, over the years that we have watched, witnessed, you know, adds so much credence and credibility to this entire field. We've talked for years on Coast to Coast about disclosure, about revelations, when we're going to know something. It still hasn't come yet. I mean, are we going to be 110 years old before we find out?
Not at all, George. Let me address that. First of all, on the word fast walker or fast walkers, I think that what is happening is We're addressing a new term here, and this opens a doorway to a whole new mindset. It's like a gateway to a whole nother vibration. And we're getting what's called the fast walker effect. And one of the reasons I've asked these guests to come here tonight and ask you if you would to bring them on is that there's a new wave of cooperation that's sweeping through the disclosure movement. And I believe that we can have disclosure in 2007 if we work together. But we got to do it like A.J. Gavard did down there in Brazil. We have to demand of the government, we have to demand of the politicians that they come out of the woodwork on this. And we got to ask the question, have you been briefed? Right, Paula?
Well, that's one of the ways, but, you know, we've tried that, too. I personally have to tell you, I don't think it's going to come from the government. I think it's going to come from commitment of individuals, that will create a critical mass, and some of this has to be outside the country. Therefore, you're going to be speaking to Alfred Weber, who is really dedicated his life, and Michael Sala, who is from Australia, and people from outside the country who are also interested in this disclosure, because the idea that the United States government is the one that's going to be the ultimate disclosure vehicle, I don't buy into, because there's too much of a buy-in with the technology. And you know we're still in a fossil fuel-type technology situation.
Sure.
Until that changes, there is not going to, for me, it will not happen this way. It'll happen around the world when all the researchers get together, when all the people get together, and it'll be an international kind of thing.
You're right, Paula. You're absolutely right.
Paula,
you have a lot of international influence in Fast Walkers. You have a lot of foreign people, and I'm very thrilled about that, because this is not only an American phenomenon. This is a phenomenon that takes place in Mexico with Jaime Maussan's sightings in Mexico City. The sightings in Mexico City that Jaime Maussan has on his show, in A.J. Gavard in Brazil. We need to remember that this is an international effort, and this is where I'm coming from.
Well, there's no question. It is worldwide now, and you know, some of the reports that we're getting from outside of the United States are even more dramatic than anything we've even heard here in the States, Paula.
Oh, I know, because I think it's very difficult to hear anything in the States. Living in Europe, we get it on the you know, 6 o'clock news. I mean, they don't have any problem with it. We had Jaime Maussan's footage on major television. It went on for half an hour. Nobody had a problem with it. Things that should be shown on CNN. I don't think that there's any shock value in Europe about this. They're just used to seeing it. In South America, they're just used to having it be like that. So, they're used to having these sightings in an everyday occurrence. I think it becomes more of a ridicule, a fringe subject in the United States for some reason. George, I don't know if you agree.
Yeah, I do in some respect. I'm also fascinated, though, Paula, in your work with Monsignor Balducci that you've known for such a long, long time. Is he still part of the Vatican, or have they shoved him out?
Now, would he tell me personally? He lives up the street from me. I live across from St. Peter's, so I see him often on an informal basis. You know, I have lunch with him and so forth. What he told me off the record is that, look, if they didn't want me to talk, they would tell me not to. He said they're very interested in this. Of course they're very interested in this. I think everybody's interested in what's coming out of the skies and who's visiting and so forth. And he said basically, he said they're allowing me to talk about it in a way that kind of prepares the way. And I think that Robert agrees that what's happening, even with all the researchers, is we're paving the way. We're paving the way for disclosure. And Monsignor Balducci is a really outspoken proponent of a benign presence. He doesn't believe they are malevolent. He doesn't believe that they are evil aliens. He believes that they are that if they can get here, they're illuminated and they probably are not wasting their time fighting and having wars and having all the things that are happening on this planet on a very low level, because he thinks we're a very low-level species.
Well, can we say, can we assume then that he has been sanctioned by the Vatican, in as much as they haven't told him to stop talking?
Yeah, I think so, George. But I think he's been sanctioned by the. I think people like Colonel Corso, Robert Dean, a lot of people have been sanctioned to break open some of this right in bits and pieces. And I think that, yeah, absolutely. Your question is yes, and he's a very outspoken person. And on Fast Walkers, he has a beautiful presence. I'm sitting next to him doing the translation. He, of course, he's speaking in Italian. But I think it's worth hearing what he has to say. And he also quotes the Bible. He thinks that there is evidence in the Bible that Christ is king of the universe. And he said the universe is made up of more than planet Earth.
Yeah. And I think it's important that we give kudos to Stephen Bassett and his whole X conference, because he was part of the of helping you and the people of Earth to have a chance to actually meet and see the Monsignor.
Yes, actually, this was Stephen Bassett's idea, but Stephen Bassett is an activist. He's that individual power that wants this out, and he's like a steamroller, like Stephen Greer also. And
well,
so,
you know, Bassett's a former lobbyist, ran for Congress from Maryland, did not win because he tried to push the UFO issue. I guess there are people who don't want to hear that from a politician, but there are a lot of people who do too, but not enough to get Stephen elected. But he's been in this for a long, long time, Paula and Robert. I remember interviewing him when I was doing my local show in St. Louis back in 96, 97. And he was pushing, they were working on getting a full-page ad in the Wall Street Journal that was going to be signed by many top government officials with their names and talking about disclosure and what they knew, and it was going to tie in with Stephen Greer's disclosure project, and it just never happened. And it was unfortunate. And then the whole horrible situation with 9/11 occurred, and that kind of pushed everything to the back burner.
Right, and as I'm sure you know, he did come up to our world premiere here in Sholo of the Fast Walker film in the theater, and Steve made that trip personally and was here for 4 days talking to people. And one of the things he wants to do is he wants to give a Fast Walker DVD to every single member of Congress and the president, vice president, his entire cabinet, and put it in their hands, and the hands of their staffer at least.
Well, Robert, we're going to lose Paula here in about 5 minutes before we bring in Alfred Weber with you next half hour. Paula, based on everything you've been working on recently, you've been on the program many times here with me, where's this all headed, Paula?
Well, a couple of things I wanted to say. First of all, I want to quote, you must have gotten an email from a Clark McClellan ground crew astronaut, NASA, worked on the Apollo program.
I got it right here on my desk.
All right. Well, he is one of my star witnesses, and he said he saw Fast Walkers.
Let me read this email he sent to me, and with a subject view. It says, "Hello, George. I wish you and Paula and the Fast Walker program much success. During my many years at Cape Canaveral and the Kennedy Space Center, 1958 to 1992, and working on or witnessing 634 launches to date, I observe many fast walkers during our manned and unmanned space missions. The Big Sur case in California is an example. NASA is not releasing information on these and other alien contacts for obvious reasons. A very tight control is kept to control such releases secret, again, for obvious reasons. Clark McClellan, tell us a little bit about who he is, Paula.
Okay, Clark McClellan, I call him a ground crew astronaut because he was an engineer, but he was involved in all manned Apollo programs. I mean, right there when the astronauts came off, designed, you know, pieces of the actual machinery, knows exactly, he was in the command center, he knows exactly what went on at NASA, knows exactly what the story is with the UFOs, because he was also part of an investigative team with VAPRO at the time. Clark has a blockbuster book that, if he ever would release it, would give a lot of detail on what happens with the UFOs. I mean, you and I and everybody know the UFOs are real. But when NASA doesn't talk about it, and astronauts like Edgar Mitchell and Gordon Cooper and Clark McClellan talk about it, then we know that we're dealing with real material. And since he is a firsthand witness, and I just deal with firsthand witnesses, Clark has been telling information about what he knows slowly. And there's a piece about his conversation with Barry Goldwater in my brand new book called Exopolitics, How Does One Speak to a Ball of Light? Which is a strange title.
I love it. Well, as you know, a couple weeks ago, as I had Richard Hoagland on the program, we talked about how NASA has admitted that there's going to be an investigation underway because a lot of information was not disseminated to us about things. We don't know what those things were.
Right.
All we know is we never found out about them. And it just makes you very suspect, Paula and Robert, about everything now that might not be coming out of that organization.
Well, I think there's a lot. Richard always told me, Richard Hoagland is very wise, by the way. He's a very good friend, but he's also one of the wisest people I know.
Well, he's one of the guys where you say, a wise man once say, and it's Richard that we're quoting.
Well, wise man once said to me, Paula, there is a battle within NASA. There is a battle within the government. There is a battle within MJ-12 for the truth to come out, that it's time for the truth to come out. And I think Richard believes, as I believe, that there are groups of people that think, hey, it's about time that this come out. And Richard is it follows this because I know Richard personally, and he's got a lot to contribute to this whole entire subject. But NASA is definitely involved. But you have to ask why these people don't want to talk now, or why is it being hidden now? And it's not about the aliens. It's about the technology.
And Robert, Paula is illustrated and highlighted in the Fast Walkers DVD.
She does a great job. I want to thank her so much for going on camera and talking with us and all the great work she's doing out there, both in Italy and worldwide. She's a wonderful reporter and a great, great light worker.
Great. Paula, thank you for being on the program. Appreciate it.
Well, thank you, George.
And you have a wonderful holiday and a super new year as well. So, Robert, do you still make these trips to Jupiter?
You know, I wished I did. It's not something that I can do at will, or I guess maybe you have to get the e-ticket. Maybe I'll get bonus points, George, after this program, right?
Well, if you do, I want those frequent flyer miles. I want to go.
No kidding. I recommend it to anyone that gets a chance. There were a bunch of other people at that briefing, and I think it's important that if you were at that briefing, get a hold of me.
Well,
right.
I wish I were at the briefing, Robert. You've got to arrange it for me if they come back for you.
Good, George.
Stay with us. Up next, Alfred Weber. He is an expert on exopolitics and UFOs. I'm George Norrie, back in a moment on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast to Coast. I'm George Norrie with Robert Miles and our guest this half hour, Alfred Weber. Robert, why don't you tell us a little bit about Alfred, and we'll bring him in as well.
Well, Alfred is one of those courageous individuals that was willing to put his entire reputation and his life on the line in the pursuit of truth. And
right.
He was one of the original people that was commissioned in the Carter study of what was actually going on, and when he was at Stanford, a very brilliant, highly successful, top-of-the-line guy who was in charge of that study. And he can address it more thoroughly, but I think as a result of the position he took incredible damage to his personal reputation and his life, and he continued to pursue the truth in spite of that.
Let's bring him in, Alfred Weber. Hello, Alfred. Thanks for joining us, Alfred.
George, thank you very much. You know, I think it's very symbolic, the passing of former President Gerald R. Ford tonight, because it was in the 1976 U.S. presidential campaign that Jimmy Carter ran on an ET platform saying that if elected president, he would open up the U.S. files on UFOs, being a code word for extraterrestrials. And on the other side, Gerald R. Ford was the opposite candidate as chairman of the Armed Services Committee because of the 1966 UFO flap. He had been forced to hold hearings in the House of Representatives, at which he brought Robert Strange McNamara as his principal witness to say, we have thoroughly investigated the issue of UFOs with our consultant, J. Allen Hynek, and found it to be nothing but swamp gas. So we had a classic campaign in 1976 between Jimmy Carter, the extraterrestrial candidate, and an extraterrestrial contactee. He had had a close encounter of the first kind in 1969 while governor of Georgia. So immediately after the Carter election in December of 1976, I went down to Ingo Swann's apartment down on the Bowery in New York City and stated to him that I would like to have established in the Jimmy Carter White House the first non-military civilian scientific study of extraterrestrial communication. He suggested that I contact Dr. Hal Puthoff and Russell Targ, who he was serving as a subject then in their experiments on remote viewing, which has since become one of the principal scientific data tools of exopolitics. So I went to SRI, had a beautiful two-hour conversation with them, linked up with the Center for Study of Social Policy, explained to them how I wanted to go into the Carter White House. They offered me a job as a futurist, and a few months later, I approached the Carter White House and received their approval for this study. So this all brings it back tonight with the passing of Gerald R. Ford. I think that we've closed a chapter in the book, in sort of the book of the old story, and we're opening, I think, a new chapter for 2007. Many people feel this, and I felt that. I was telling Robert when I finished watching the film Fast Walkers, I had a real aha experience, George, that something clicked, and I said, you know, the average viewer who sees this film is going to really feel that the extraterrestrial presence matters in our day-to-day lives.
Well said, Alfred. When you got involved in all of this, and as Robert was saying, you kind of put your career on the line. What happened? Because you're right, where Carter was the full disclosure president, but it caught up to him, obviously. You know, the Arab oil embargo and the Iranian hostage situation did him in terms of his election, his reelection. But what happened? Because I don't recall Carter publicly after that campaign saying much about UFOs afterwards.
Yeah. Actually, there were a number of initiatives coming out of the Carter White House in that first year to follow through on his campaign promise. One was with our general counsel at the Institute for Cooperation in Space, the eminent attorney Danny Sheehan. And Danny Sheehan was commissioned by the Carter White House on an informal basis over to the Congressional Research Service to do some checking in the National Archives and actually went on a mission there. But you're right. He was able to find several alleged extraterrestrial artifacts in the National Archives, but nothing really came of it. Likewise, with our White House-approved Stanford Research Institute, Carter, 1977 Carter White House Extraterrestrial Communication Study. We had full White House approval. We had the eminent scientists on board. We were involving the National Science Foundation. We were involving NASA. And essentially, the Department of Defense intervened with Stanford Research Institute, and DOD at that time represented about 25% of SRI's budget. SRI's budget was about $100 million at that time, and so it was about $25 million, and they were told point blank, and I was in that meeting, they said, if this study goes forward, we're pulling the entire DOD SRI budget. And so the project was shut down.
Oh, my God.
So it wasn't really Carter. It was basically, I believe, in my opinion, it was the Department of Defense and the military intelligence establishment wanting to maintain their monopoly on human extraterrestrial secret liaison projects. That's what that was all about.
So you're convinced, Alfred, beyond a shadow of a doubt, that our military has been involved in the UFO phenomena, has been integrally involved. They're keeping quiet. Maybe there's even some kind of cooperation going on between ETs and our military. But you believe this has been going on?
Well, my belief is based on evidence. And there are a number of whistleblowers who have been involved with a secret human extraterrestrial liaison programs that were secret U.S. government programs that are now, working on releasing those programs to the public. I've been serving as an informal advisor to them. And over the coming years, they will be making that public. So I have seen a lot of that evidence firsthand. And there's a lot of evidence that's available in the literature of government whistleblowers that's fairly credible, that the United States government has had ongoing extraterrestrial human liaison programs of a highly technical nature that have permitted the growth of advanced defense industry and related technologies. And I believe that when Carter, my surmise and my experience and my hypothesis is that the reason why our civilian studies in 1977 were shut down, Danny Sheehan's was shut down. The SRI study was shut down by the Pentagon, by the Department of Defense, is that the Department of Defense wanted to maintain its monopoly on super-secret human extraterrestrial liaison programs and did not want civilian scientists in a transparent civilian scientific study to become involved, especially with White House approval, which is what we got. And we got that because Carter himself had a close encounter of the first kind in the company of 10 members of the Leary Georgia Lions Club in 1969 when he was running for governor of Georgia, and he filed his own UFO sighting report in 1973 while he was governor of Georgia.
Let's bring you in now, Robert, and tell me why you brought Alfred. I could tell, but tell me why you brought Alfred into the Fast Walkers video.
Okay, because he's one of the most courageous individuals in the world. Hi, Alfred. How you doing?
Hi. Yes. Yes. Hi, Robert.
You know, we are at a state of high excitement, George, because our understanding is that a copy of Fast Walkers has been given to President Carter. And it is our hope that that Alfred will be able to reestablish communications with a project he had dear to his heart and he has given his life to in the near future. And we're also really excited because Canada is going to have a premiere in Toronto on March the 7th. And up there, maybe Alfred can address the politics. It's a little different in Canada. We don't have the suppression of the media coming out of Canada. Would you talk about the
Tell us about that in the few minutes we have left here, Alfred.
Yeah, sure. Just very, very briefly, George, your listeners may recall that in the fall of 2005, the Honorable Paul Hellyer, former Minister of Defense and Deputy Prime Minister of Canada,
yes,
came forth and stated that he believed in the extraterrestrial presence, and he was speaking because he thought that the U.S. Space Command was, in fact, preparing to place weapons in space to prepare for a possible interstellar war with what are apparently a friendly extraterrestrial presence. And so that he had to speak out. So that that would be the equivalent, for example, of a former U.S. Secretary of Defense and a former U.S. Vice President like Al Gore speaking out on this issue. So it has caused quite a ripple here. So what we see for 2007 is that, as I said, here in Canada and elsewhere in the world, the extraterrestrial presence is now something that it's normalized. It's like it makes a difference in your everyday life. And as part of the Canadian Exopolitics Initiative, there are a number of NGOs, my organization, our organization rather, the Institute for Cooperation in Space, the Disclosure Project, and Exopolitics Toronto, we have been asked by the leading opposition party, the Liberal Party, to submit our exopolitics parliamentary request, and that's going in next week. And that includes, for example, to address the global warming and energy issue, a request for federal funding for environmental-friendly new energy and new technology research and development related to exopolitical activity, so that we can get Canadian federal funds to help researchers develop new energy and propulsion resources that are related to extraterrestrial modeled propulsion systems. We had a project here in Canada called Project Magnet. It was part of the Department of Transportation of Canada in 1959-52. It was fully funded. It was transparent. It was open. It was based on developing propulsion sources that were modeled on extraterrestrial vehicles. And it's in the literature, and it's in the Canadian archives. You can go to our website, www.exopolitics.com, and see that. We're also bringing in legislation for a space preservation treaty signing conference to permanently ban all space-based weapons and warfare in space. In 1997, Canada brought, over a three-day weekend, 122 nations to Ottawa, where they signed the Landmines Treaty, banning all landmines.
Mm-hmm.
Kids all over the world were getting their limbs blown off. We're asking Canada to do the same thing, to ban all space-based weapons, so we don't have this expansion of the permanent warfare economy in space, and therefore put up this permanent barrier to being able to integrate with the rest of galactic society. Also, it's very important, for example, people like Cynthia McKinney and Lorraine Murray, the environmental commissioner of Berkeley, California, I've been invited as an international lawyer. We have been invited to an international war crimes tribunal by the former prime minister of Malaysia. It's being held in February of 2007. You can go to peaceinspace.org and for the details. And this will be to establish a major war crimes tribunal to be held against what we can call the New World Order International War Crimes Organization, so that we can finally bring this gallery of rogues to task for creating what we can call, I mean, what we've been able to establish by the evidence is a global depopulation program using depleted uranium, using diseases like AIDS, using the vaccines to depopulate the earth by between 2 and 4 billion people. And all this is established by the evidence. So these are some of the steps that we are taking to keep the Armageddon scenario and the nightmare scenario from occurring. Finally, I'd just like to say that what, for those skeptics in the audience, that what our friend Robert said about his trip to Jupiter, we know that now scientifically, through scientific remote viewing, there has been replicable communication established with intelligent off-planet cultures on planets like Mars, so that this has been established now through replicable scientific method. Thank you.
So do you think, though, Alfred, and all due respect to Robert, who is just a fine guest tonight, you really think he went to Jupiter?
You know, I think that from my reading of the literature, ranging from the fact that there is replicable scientific evidence, including General Al Stubblebine, who talks about U.S. Army intelligence remote viewers viewing an intelligent civilization in underground cities on Mars, to a lot of the other literature that holds that we live within a populated populated solar system, and including the evidence that Gary McKinnon, who might be the hacker who might be convicted of up to 70 years in jail from hacking into what we can call a space navy of extraterrestrial craft. Part of the disinformation that McKinnon says, and you can get this on the internet, he says that they put out disinformation that these other planets are uninhabitable, when in fact they are inhabitable. So there's a lot of evidence out there that each person can go to through the miracle of the internet and begin to decide for themselves.
Thank you, Alfred. I appreciate you being on the program. Next up with Robert Miles, Michael Sala on Coast to Coast AM. We'll be back in a minute. And welcome back to Coast. I'm George Norrie, along with Robert Miles and Dr. Michael Sala. Michael, you've been on the program before, but for some of us, why don't you explain who you are, Dr. Sala?
Hello, George.
Hi.
Yes, I've been working in the field of exopolitics since 2001, and my interest is looking at how the evidence of extraterrestrials visiting the Earth, government agencies being aware of this, how that evidence is being dealt with in ways that is not made available to the general public, the mass media, or to elected political representatives.
Okay, Robert, let's bring you in. Why did you involve Dr. Sala in the Fast Walkers video?
Hello, Michael.
Hello, Robert.
Hey, I'll tell you, George, this guy knows his stuff. This guy has got the inside scoop on a couple of issues that I'd like him to address. First of all, let's talk about alien species that are visiting the planet, and then be sure and tell us about the black budget. He does an incredible job in the Fast Walker documentary, and for those of you that's got a computer, if you go to the fastwalker.com website, there's a special page we created, George, for tonight, and it says breaking news. It's got your picture up there, and it's got all the pictures of these guys that are appearing tonight, and if you click on the picture, their bio comes up. And also, in addition to their bio, you actually get the links directly to them. And that's not just on the website. That's also on the DVD. So, Michael, would you talk about those things for us?
Sure. Well, when we're looking at the whole question of how many extraterrestrial civilizations are visiting us, we start to get an idea of just how many there are by looking at some government documents that have been discussed by whistleblowers. And I want to refer to two that I think give us a really accurate estimate of exactly how many races are involved here. The first is Command Sergeant Major Robert Dean, who worked at NATO from 1963 to 1967, and he says while he was working there that he came across a cosmic top secret document called the Assessment that looked at the implications of UFO overflights in the NATO theater in Central Europe. And he says that document identified four different extraterrestrial civilizations that were visiting the Earth. It identified a race that looked so much like humans that they could easily mix with us. They could walk down the corridors of NATO and be unrecognized. So that was very similar to the reports of many of the contactees who said that they had met with Nordic or human-looking extraterrestrial beings who looked so much like us that that they just couldn't be distinguished in many cases. The second race that the NATO document identified was the greys, the ones that are most often associated with the abductions phenomena. And the third race is a tall group of greys, or sometimes they can be also identified as tall whites. Charles Hall, who I believe has been on the show before, he has worked at Nellis Air Force Base where he was directly interacting with these tall white extraterrestrial civilizations. And the fourth race mentioned in the assessment was a group of reptilians, and these are increasingly being studied by researchers. For example, Dr. Joe Lules has written about reptilian data. And apparently John Mather was also working on reptilian data before his tragic death. So they were four different extraterrestrial races identified in the assessment. And a second whistleblower that I think gives us a better idea of exactly how many we are dealing with is Sergeant Clifford Stone, who claims to have worked on the UFO crash retrieval teams, in particular Project Bluefly, where he went in as part of this elite team to basically go into a crashed disk to be able to communicate with any extraterrestrial biological entities that were in the craft or were injured. And he says he was given a medical manual as part of his job because he was the first to go into one of these crashed disks. And he claims that this medical manual was over 1,000 pages long and that it had information on 57 extraterrestrial civilizations, 57 different races. Basically, he had to know what first aid could be administered to any of these beings that were found in any of these crashed disks. So that's amazing information because that means that not only do we have a clear answer that extraterrestrials are visiting us, but also the government is aware of as many as 57 different extraterrestrial races that are interacting or visiting the Earth, which is really astounding when you think of the implications of that, because we don't know what those races may be working on. They would predictably vary in terms of their intentions, in terms of their programs. So it means that we may have an incredibly complex exopolitical situation before us in terms of extraterrestrial races.
I'm starting to think that these beings that are visiting us, Michael, are dangerous. You know, I never thought that before, but after talking to David Jacobs and a number of other people, I think there's a race out there that means serious business with us. What do you think?
I think that there's a lot of evidence that there have been invasive procedures conducted by certain extraterrestrial entities, and those invasive procedures really mean that we need to be very alert. And I think David Jacobs brings that out very clearly in his work, that a lot of the abduction research that has been done shows that in particular those extraterrestrial beings associated with the abduction phenomenon are really acting in ways that we do need to be very careful, very suspicious of exactly what they're doing, because they're violating human rights systematically. And obviously the effort to create a hybrid human race is something that we need to be very wary of as to what the ultimate agenda is there.
Well, that's a key point, the agenda. And Robert, did you ever pick up on your trip to Jupiter? Did you ever pick up what this agenda might be?
Yeah, I think it's an agenda to bring about chaos, war, and destruction to the planet. And I think that we need to take action. We need to realize, as Jerry Pippin said, that we don't have to have this occur to us. We need to exercise our strength of will and character, and we need to begin to vibrate at a harmonic love instead of fear and hate, because those beings dwell on that. They suck our energy. And, you know, I'm tired of hearing about the doom. I want to hear about the hope. And I feel that there is a harmonic of mutual cooperation and togetherness that is occurring on this planet of the people of the world, and it's a demonstration on this show tonight that it can happen.
Well, there's no question about that. Michael, I'll always remember our chat about Eisenhower and what he knew. Was this really the beginning, do you think, of government withholding information on us, to us?
Well, I think there's evidence that it began during the Second World War. Robert Wood has done some work on analyzing the Majestic documents and on memos and other government documents that point to 1942 as being the day when, or the date when this really began in terms of the retrieval of crashed discs. Because obviously once you retrieve a crashed UFO, then any question over what they are is definitively answered. And I think with Eisenhower, what we have is the evidence that meetings had occurred between senior government officials and extraterrestrial entities to forge agreements. And I think that is what happened during the Eisenhower era. I don't believe it happened during the Truman or the Roosevelt administrations. All the evidence that I've seen is that it was with President Eisenhower that the meetings and the agreements actually began.
And Robert, in Fast Walkers, of course, you address quite heavily the non-disclosure aspect of all of this.
Absolutely, and I think it's really important that Michael also talk about the black budget, and he does an incredible job of that. Michael, would you do that for us?
Sure. Well, the black budget is really the key to understanding exactly how vast this secret project is in terms of dealing with extraterrestrial biological entities and their technologies without government being aware. Obviously, if you're going to do this without the government being aware, without the media being aware, you need to set up a special mechanism to raise money to do this, because the way our governmental system is set up is that all money is subject to oversight in the various committees in Congress. So that means if you're going to set up a system to deal with the reverse engineering of extraterrestrial vehicles and dealing with extraterrestrial biological entities, you need to do it in a way where the money trail cannot be followed. And so the way you do that is to create a vast black budget. And the agency that was designed from its inception to basically create the funding for these black projects was the CIA. When you look at the creation of the CIA in 1947, that occurred around the same time as the Roswell crash. But what's really significant about the CIA's creation was that in 1949, by statute, it was given the power to be able to expend money given to it without regard to provisions of law. No other government agency has that power. And what that means is that the CIA can get revenue from any source that it is able to get a handle on and expend that money without regard to law. So there's no way in which that money can be traced or is subject to any kind of oversight or any kind of government regulation at all. So when we look at exactly what it is that's funding these black projects, we need to consider, first of all, the CIA, and we need to consider the relationship the CIA has with the Department of Defense. Because as the conventional thinking is that the CIA is funded from single-line items in the, from the Department of Defense that are basically channeling money from the Department of Defense to the CIA, and that is generally accepted as a black budget. And the estimate of that is roughly about $28 billion that goes to all of the intelligence agencies. Now, that funding is really just a very small fraction of what is in fact going on, because my research, I believe, what that determines is that the relationship is not one of the Department of Defense sending black budget money to the CIA for distribution to the intelligence community. It actually works the other way around, that what's really happening is that CIA is generating vast amounts of money through activities that many would regard as unconstitutional, and sending that money through to the Department of Defense, which then siphons that vast amount of money into these various black projects. And estimating the size of the black budget, that I believe can be traced to the Inspector General reports of the Department of Defense budget. And in 1988, 1999, and the year 2000, on average, $1.7 trillion was not accounted for. In 1998, the funding that couldn't be accounted for was $1.7 trillion. In 1999, it was $2.3 trillion. And in the year 2000, it was $1.1 trillion. Now, $1.7 trillion, that's the average for those 3 years that could not be accounted for. Now, $1.7 trillion is over four times the current funding of the Department of Defense. So what we can estimate from these irregularities in the DoD budget is that, in fact, the black budget for all extraterrestrial-related activities is as much as four times greater than the whole Department of Defense budget. So we're
That's incredible.
Incredible.
Where's all this money coming from, Michael?
Well, I think there are a number of sources. I think that other government agencies are basically having money skimmed off the top of them. I think that the CIA has set up a lot of front companies. I think that the CIA is involved in the petrochemical industry in ways in which that funds from that can go into the CIA's black budget. And also there's evidence that the CIA is also involved in unconstitutional activities, and there are a number of people who have done really important research showing a connection between the CIA and the drug trade, and that is a very controversial topic, but it does suggest that the CIA is complicit in using some of the drug trade money for black budget projects.
Well, that's a good point, and that's something that has been talked about for some time.
George,
Michael,
I think it's important
ahead,
that you realize that Michael has put his life on the line with this information. He is a courageous person, and he has had a dedication that few human people on the planet has to this disclosure.
Well, yes.
He is a real hero. Thank you, Michael.
Thank you, Robert.
I agree. Michael, I'm going to let you go, and I'm going to keep you on the line here, Robert. Thanks again, Michael. Appreciate you being on the program.
You're up.
That's Dr. Michael Sala, regular guest on Coast to Coast. Robert, what we'll do when we get to next hour is the first half hour, I'm going to talk with Elliot Maynard, you, and Anthony Miles. We'll split the half hour with them, and then I want open line phone calls with you in the last half hour, because a lot of our listeners want to talk with you about some of the work you've done, your trip to Jupiter, so we'll do that as well. The people you assembled when you put together Fast Walkers, was it difficult or easy for you to get them?
Well, I think a lot of it is the fact that that we found a spirit of cooperation occurring at both the International UFO Congress in Laughlin and also at the X Conference, and that there was a lot of trust there that was given to us, and also I had some very some great help, a real pioneer and a wonderful person, Jerry Pippin, personally introduced me to a lot of these people, and he put his reputation on the line that he thought I was a good person, along with some other people, Wendell Stevens, and some people said that I was okay and to go ahead and talk. And I would just want to thank them all for doing that. And then, of course, we went out and we found people in our backyard. and in Europe, my co-producer, Bruce Jessup in Europe, and my wonderful team that's gathered, they all contributed. Pretty soon people started coming up and talking to us, and it's an amazing thing that's occurring there.
For people who want the DVD, the video, where can they get it?
Well, first of all, you can get it on the website, fastwalkers.com. There's also some call-in phone numbers that if I could, go ahead and give out.
Sure, please.
Okay, they could call 303-440-0221. And they could also call, if that line's busy, they could call 541-523-2630. And I know, George, that many, many of your callers are not on the Internet. They're actually driving in trucks. They're working out there. They're doing jobs. They're listening to your incredible show. And I just encourage them, if they need to write. They can write in care of Robert Miles, P.O. Box 2671, Sholo, Arizona. That's in the United States, so it's USA 85902. And a lot of that information is on the Fast Walker website, and I want to thank you for having us on your show. It's an amazing opportunity to reach the world out there, and I know you do.
All right, stay with us, Robert. We've got a final hour to go. We're going to bring in two more guests for the half hour. And then for those of you who want an opportunity to chat with Robert Miles, we'll open up the last half hour tonight for phone calls. I'm George Norrie, and I'll be back in a moment on Coast to Coast AM. Okay, we're going to talk for a few minutes now with Elliot Maynard and Robert Miles here before we go to the break. And then a little bit later on this half hour, Anthony Miles joins us. Then we'll take phone calls with just Robert Miles as we wrap up this program tonight. Fascinating, lots of information. Robert, give us a little bio on Elliot Maynard, if you would.
Well, Elliot Maynard is a person who actually bought the DVD. One of the people that found out about
it. So that's why you put him on?
Pardon me?
You put him on because he bought the DVD?
No, I put him on because he's one of the top people in the world.
Yes, he is.
That actually saw it and then went ahead and took action. He took action at a level that most people could never do. And welcome, Elliot, and thank you for being on the show tonight with me. Anyone that goes up to the Fast Walker website can click on his picture and get his bio. He's a wonderful person, and he has personally taken the problems of planet Earth. He's studied them. He has a PhD in it. He's one of the top marine biologists in the world. He knows the current situation. You don't have, like I say, be a psychic. You need to have access to the information that's in his material and in his work and his life. Thank you, Elliot, for being on.
Well, welcome to the show, Elliot.
And
good.
Thank you, George.
Oh, my pleasure. Now, Elliot, give us a little bit of your background, and then tell me about the influence that the video Fast Walkers had on you.
Well, my background crosses many different areas, from marine biology, biological oceanography, tropical forest ecology. I did pioneering work in aquaculture to help solve the food problems of the world, and I'm also a certified professional management consultant and have a degree in consciousness technology. So most recently, I've been working with the Aerospace Technology Working Group, a group of people from NASA, government, the military, and academia, and other international groups, and the conclusions we have come to, without doubt, this group agrees that the planet Earth is in not in just a state of global warming, but a global emergency. And so I have been working with this group to bring forth the new paradigm of planetary management. We have the technology. We have force multipliers such as the internet and AM radio to get the message out and multiply it fractally. We have found that when we operate on a collaborative basis, in other words, between cultures, bridging between cultures, between disciplines of science, technology, religion, art, and finding the common ground, that things begin to happen very magically. And what has happened very recently in the last two or three decades is that Earth, with its network of satellites, and these satellites, some of them observe things in different modalities, such as infrared and ultraviolet, which go way beyond the human senses. And so what we have here is an extension of the global brain, or the global consciousness field, in electronic format. And all of this has reflected back, given Earth its own self-reflexive consciousness, and the human consciousness has more or less followed this through watching so much television and the internet and the computers. So these electronic devices tend to serve as waveguides for the human consciousness. And one of the things that I am very, very much concerned with are the aspects of preserving the environment, going ahead of simple conservation, moving into global restoration of the damage that humans have caused, and then starting to clean up the atmosphere, the global commons, and the oceans. And now there are actually underway very recently new programs for actually seeding some of the oceans of the world with powdered iron to create plankton blooms, which will actually boost the food chain and start establishing reestablishing the whale populations.
Well, and it's critical, as you know, Elliot, because of the report that says within the next 40-plus years, the seafood population on this planet may dwindle to nothing.
Absolutely critical. So we go beyond this with another new paradigm, which I have developed, called ecological enhancement. And that uses our technology and our wisdom and our positive, collaborative spirit that Robert spoke about so well. And if we can do this and bridge national boundaries and ethnic boundaries and racial boundaries and get our religious leaders involved, we can actually transform this planet. And by increments, tiny increments of technology, and multiplying this with thousands and millions of people thinking the same way, we can actually build this up into what people call miracles and what scientists call quantum leaps.
All right. Well, I like that. Now, how did the Fast Walkers program affect you to this point?
I've been a great fan of science fiction since I was old enough to read. I have been. I've gotten many of my futuristic ideas from science fiction. Everything. When a scientist or an artist or any thinker, a global leader gets to a certain point, and I've read thousands and thousands of books, you begin to realize that there are ultimate truths. And after I went to the world premiere of Fast Walkers in Sholo, Arizona, I actually had a chance to talk with Bob Dean, with Charles Hall, and Wendell Stevens, who I had read about. But there was absolutely no doubt in my mind when I spoke with them and with their direct experiences with sitting at the table and interacting with alien beings, that there's just no doubt in my mind that we have a massive cover-up here. And so it's very important that we break this truth embargo, and we do it in such a way that we still have our economy, we still have our big corporations,
mm-hmm.
and create win-win solutions, because this way we will not have the disruption.
All right, Elliot, thank you for being on the program. I appreciate you coming aboard here.
Well, thank you for inviting me.
Elliot,
thank you so much for your hard work and for your support of Fastwalkers.
What's so fascinating here, Robert, of course, is these professionals who are talking about extraterrestrial life. I mean, this is absolutely fantastic. Now, in a moment, we'll be joined by Anthony Miles, so stand by. He's next on Coast to Coast AM. Now we're going to chat with Anthony Miles along with Robert Miles. Is there a relationship here, Robert?
I'm very, very proud to say there is. Anthony is my son, but he is a professional filmmaker in his own right, and I just want to say welcome to the show.
Hi, Anthony.
Hi, thank you very much for having me, George. I sure appreciate being here.
Good to have you with us, and then Robert will take phone calls with you next half hour. Anthony, tell me about what it was like to be involved with Fastwalkers, your father, on this project. It truly is fascinating, and more importantly, the list of people that Robert has brought to the table in the video, not just this program, it's a who's who in ufology. Very well done.
It really is, and, you know, we really, really were blessed and almost guided to be able to have such an amazing list of people in the film, as you've stated. And, you know, going into this, I was not an expert on extraterrestrials or their craft or anything like that, but I was a living, breathing, loving member of the human race. And to me, that's the most important thing, because there's lots of information available on the Internet, on wonderful programs like yours, all over, that are out there. But there seems to be, at least in my experience, there seems to be a bridge that's missing. And one of the goals for Fastwalkers was really to create a bridge, and that's really what we worked hard to do.
What are the chances of getting this eventually on either cable or commercial television?
You know, we are really hopeful for that happening. And even beyond that, one of the things that we did when we produced this documentary is we chose to produce it in a high-definition format. And there was a couple of reasons for that. One of the reasons is that obviously the world is changing over right now, and high-def is becoming pretty much the standard, and will soon become the standard for programming in the world, pretty much. Other than that, and more importantly, is that, as you stated, we were able to get such an amazing group of people in this film that we absolutely didn't want the level of quality to diminish from the credibility of the experts and the witnesses in the film. And we really put a lot of effort and extra time into making the final production value something that wouldn't distract from the message of the program.
Anthony, as a videographer, as a cinematographer, you know, so many people now have video cell phones and little video cameras and things.
Sure.
Where's the really compelling UFO video out there from people? I mean, if we would really have that, and we've had some things we've seen. We've all have seen some of this. But if we could get someone to get us the real compelling stuff, I mean, it would just break this whole subject wide open. When are we going to get it?
You know, that's the million-dollar question, right? I mean, when are we going to get a shot of a UFO? I guess the statement is, when were we going to see a UFO over the Super Bowl? But you know, the truth is the Jaime Maussan footage that came from Mexico, some of that was released, and we were able to use some footage that was presented by him. But there's also other footage out there in the world, not just in Fastwalkers, that is tremendous and is quite mind-blowing. And if you were to see it, and if you haven't been privy to that type of footage, it really, really is incredible. I don't know if you've been able to see it, George.
Sure,
but,
have. Sure,
you
have.
Know, when we went into this, you know, my perception when we went to the first UFO Congress that we went to begin our acquisition of material, we were able to see Jaime Maussan's presentation. And I got to tell you, as somebody who wasn't, super into extraterrestrials and UFOs personally, it was quite eye-opening to see Haimo Masson's presentation. And boy, was that really awe-inspiring.
Dad tells you, Anthony, I've been to Jupiter. What does the sun say?
He's my dad, and I've lived with him, and he's a wonderful man. He's got a big heart and a warm, warm spirit, and I think that's pretty evident. But it's like any father-son thing. I think if he wasn't my father, it would be a lot easier for me to accept. But since he is my father, it's so close to home that it's hard to give it the thought that it deserves. But saying that, my father has told me as I'm growing up that, there is a mission and there is this information. And it's pretty funny because Fastwalkers actually is kind of a realization of part of that mission that he spoke of as I was growing up as a child. And one of the stories that he has told to me is that, before I was born, he was contacted and they actually mentioned to him that I would be who I am, and I would be named a certain thing, which he, in fact, did name me. And the culmination of that and part of his mission of, educating through media and those kind of things has really shaped who I've become today. And ultimately, we've created this documentary, Fastwalkers, and have gotten a tremendous, lineup of the world's foremost experts, absolutely. And, I guess I can't look at that as a mistake.
All right. Now, Robert, on your website, you've put out a call for visionaries, for people who want to help launch Safe Space or to get into a grassroots movement. How can people help you? And then you got to tell us about the spaceship you want to build.
You bet. I think that one of the things that is happening is that we need visionaries and dreamers and people that are willing to take action. And the real heroes of the 21st century are the people that have stood up and taken the heat. People like Dr. Stephen Greer, people like Haimo Masson, people like Charles Hall and Len Horowitz and all the great people that came forward on this, and there's dozens of them. And what's also, I wanted to say, when Anthony was in that audience and we watched Haimo Masson give his presentation, we also saw the Phoenix Lights, a wonderful work by Dr. Lynn.
Lynn Keetai,
yes.
She
got a standing ovation for that motion picture. And what we're doing is we're trying to take this to the big screen with the premieres. We're trying to force Hollywood to recognize that this is not a niche video. This is not your typical UFO film. This is a motion picture that's designed to bring the public of the United States, the millions of people, and the heroes like Jose, who did the UFO film and then finds out 3 days later that his movie's up on Google and it's being stolen. These are the heroes. These are the people that put the work out, and they're the ones that people need to support. And that's what we're attempting to do with Safe Space. Safe Space is working on what we call intelligence briefings, George, and Fastwalkers is the first one. And I just want to acknowledge the fact that as a result of Coast to Coast and my interview with Art 3 years ago, that my good friend and co-producer Bruce Jessup heard that show in Germany, along with Stoyan, my webmaster, who's in Bulgaria. And together they got a hold of me and they said, let's do this. And they supported me and worked with me along with Anthony and the small international team that produced this picture. And that's what Safe Space is about. It's the end of talking about it. It's the time to do it. It's the time to take action. And I'm tired of the doom and gloom. I'm tired of the fact that Dr. Doom came on after I was with Art the last time and remote viewed me when he said that he doesn't remote view people. And he remote viewed me and said that I didn't even do this thing. And I challenge him to take a position on this. I mean, I've had it with the doom and gloom. Let's have hope.
How about the spaceship? What do you want to build?
Okay, on the cover of the book, you see a beautiful ship. And
you
also
do.
On a link on a website, to forceborn.com is an engine. And there's incredible technology out there to be put to use. There's some pictures up on these on the breaking news page of the prototype ship, which we call the Safe Space One prototype, which will be the first vessel that we'll build. And we're doing models of it now. We're doing 3D sketches. And those, if they go up there and they look at that, we're going to build that ship. And I'm asking for individuals who are interested in doing it. It'll be built by the Safe Space team, people that have a heart, who will come together and create it as a sample of mankind and humankind, not just mankind, but it's humankind working together to create something that's beautiful. It's a symbol of hope, and it'll sail the oceans of the world carrying out that mission.
Well, I got to tell you, Robert, I've never ever talked to someone who is so passionate about what he's doing. So you stick around for phone calls. Anthony, thank you for being on the program.
Thank you, George.
Thank you, son. I'm very, very proud of you.
Oh, you betcha. And, you know, I'm grateful for all the help we had and, you know, all the people who were in this product. It just wouldn't have been possible without them. And you know, with Bruce Jessup in Germany and Stoyan in Bulgaria. And, you know, we had graphics artists and people working in Canada and all over the world. This product was really a culmination or a model, if you will, for how people around the world can work together and create a great thing for humanity.
All right. Well, thanks, Anthony. We'll be back with phone calls now, the last half hour, with Robert Miles right here on Coast to Coast AM. Robert, when you met with the members of the Intergalactic Federation, even though they want to annihilate us if we continue down the path we're headed, were they friendly to you?
Yeah, there's no question. First of all, the Federation is in control of not just this universe, but the multidimensional universes. They've been in control since before pre-recorded time. They do not anticipate any kind of a threat from anything that's going on this planet. This planet is a very special planet. This planet is a prison planet. And on this planet, leaders have been gathered throughout the different universes and have been brought here, and they're here against their will without any knowledge whatsoever, except maybe a hint of preconsciousness that they're actually here and they're involved in these games of war and fear. And the Federation is not concerned about us whatsoever.
All right, to the phones we go. West of the Rockies, you're on the air with us. Hi there.
Yeah, hi there. It's Sean in Victoria, British Columbia.
Hey, Sean. Thanks for calling.
Really appreciate all the guests that you've had on tonight and your number one guest. I was involved with the Billy Meyer Group, and I was wondering what he thought about the Enoch prophecies. I have an off-world name called Loha Ron. It was given to me, and it involves giving some clarifications about the Draco reptilians that have been running the show here for quite a while. Now they're basically being pushed out of the picture, and I think a lot of people should take note in all those anti-war demonstrations, the millions and millions of people that went into peace mode or peaceful prophecy in the sense of prayer, sent a galactic SOS essentially, which is being answered now. And I think beyond that, I think there's a lot of good things on their way, and there's a lot of sightings happening globally. And if Billy Meyer's got some of the best film out there, it's just that the MIBs went and messed up the storyline with Billy and what the Palladians were trying to accomplish. And SDI is about shooting down the good guys, and we got to get away from that fear-mongering attitude with respect to visitors and just positive thinking, spiritual awareness, and we'll get through this. I just think your guest is doing an excellent job, and I want to thank you very much, George, for your participation. I'd like to get his thoughts on the Enoch prophecy. So even though they project a gloomy possible future, there's also wordage in there that we can collectively solve this problem, which is what your guest is all about. And I really want to applaud him for that, and I'll thank you again for your time.
Right. Well, Sean, okay. I want to thank you for the call. And, of course, for those of you who aren't aware of it, the Dracos are the really big ones. They get huge. And the real authority on this stuff is on Billy Meyer is Wendell Stevens. And Wendell spent time with Billy. Wendell is an authority on that. And hopefully Wendell can shed some light on that whole subject for you. Absolutely. Thank you.
And, you know, what's important is you, too, Robert, have stuck your neck out on this subject, haven't you?
Yeah, but I don't fear. I don't have fear of this. I come from a harmonic of love and light, as you do, George.
Mm-hmm.
And I know that if I put that energy, that fear energy out there, it can come back to me. But my good friend and co-producer Bruce Jessup, we got what's called the BJ technique, and we don't worry about it, that kind of thing. We just put our love and light out there. And that's what we're doing.
I'd love to see this planet one day, Robert, without any wars, without any famine, with people taken care of. I just don't know if that's realistic.
Realistic. And you know what I feel is that in the course of doing this and in talking to people, we've actually talked to people that have seen missile silos shut down. We in our premiere, we had a man stand up at the premiere in Sholo and tell the story of that he was there at the silos. He sent the message five times, and they shut it down. We know that if people demand that truth is out there, we know that if people tell the government that they're going to disclose, we know that if the motion picture people will put this on the big screen and we cross over out of this niche market of preaching to the choir and get out there to the world public, there's probably 150 million people or more that are aware of what's going on out there, and they want to know the truth, George, and you're part of the reason it can happen. Thank you.
Let's go to our wild card line. You're on with Robert Miles. Hi there.
Hi, this is Mike in Montana.
Good evening, Mike.
George. And
yes, sir.
I just wanted to give a little piece of the puzzle. Listening to the conversation, I figure there's a lot of military men out there. I was in the military. My father was in the military. And I'd like to tell two little incidences about his experience and my experience. Well, I was in a special military unit, U.S. Army Rangers, and we did a lot of training out near White Sands and Area 51. During the daytime, White Sands is like any desert. I mean, nothing's going on. A car might go down the road once every hour. But at night, all of a sudden, the sky is lit up. I mean, it's totally incredible. There's helicopters, there's aircraft, what people would call UFOs, just coming up out of the ground. The whole, it just was amazing. Another thing is they would take us to these underground bunker complexes. I mean, huge. I mean, huge, near Area 51. And they would prep us in case we were ever attacked, that we would retreat to there. And we would protect dignitaries and U.S. officials. Now, my father, he got out of the military and came back in private contract as a paramedic out at Area 51. Now, they didn't let anybody stay out there that works private contract. They stay in Las Vegas. They get on a bus, and they're taken out there. I'm sure you heard these stories before.
Yes.
Yeah, and he said that there were certain areas that they weren't allowed to go into that rumor had it was that there were special spacecraft there. Have you heard these stories?
Robert, have you found out anything about Area 51 and in that area?
Oh, you
when
bet.
You were doing your research?
Charles Hall, who was a weatherman out there and at Dreamland, and he comes on and they can just click on his picture on the website. And of course, in the video, Charles says so specifically, and he came to the premiere and he stood there and made the statements that he saw the aliens. They were all around him, and you know he had one time when there was over 200 tall whites right there with the U.S. military and corporate people there along with it. He actually went into some of the spacecraft, and this is an incredible man. Charles Hall is just an example of many of the brave people
that are coming out. You see, I really know that that some of the people within the structure of the government want this disclosed. And another thing I want to say is the media gets a bad rap. On a local level, they're wonderful. They respond. It's a national level you know, they're suppressing it on a very high level. It's not the individuals. It's not the individuals in the government that are doing this. It's coming from above, and that's what we've got to break, George.
East of the Rockies, welcome to the show. Hi there.
Thank you for taking my call. This is Jeff from Ferguson, Missouri.
Hey, Jeff. Hi.
Hey. Happy holidays.
You too.
And Happy New Year. I have one quick question and one quick comment, if I may. First is with the guy about the space-based weapons earlier in the program. I would rather feel the need to have them and not need them than need them and not have them. You understand what I'm saying?
I do.
And then I guess the question is to the guest now: Do we have any space-based fighters or interplanetary interceptors for defense in the event something does go down? And I'll take my answer off the air. Thank you.
What have you heard about any kind of defense mechanism out there? Anything, Robert?
We've got that kind of craft. We've had it for a long time. There is no, if people only knew the reality, as Sean David Morton says, if only we knew you can't handle the truth. I mean, if it's so close to Stargate SGI, the average person just can't even imagine how different the world is than what we're being told it is.
Okay, let's go west of the Rockies. You're on the air with us. Hi there.
Hi, this is John. I'm a security officer in Yuma, Arizona.
Well, hello, John. Thanks for calling.
Yeah, I was kind of worrying about the media and the whole disclosure deal that you were all discussing there earlier.
Yeah.
Maybe it's all the little movies that we're watching is a small glimpse into disclosure, in a sense. You know, like they're trying to ease us into it, you know, instead of just, hey, let's plant a Martian, on top of the White House or something like that, because people would be scared of that. You know, they want to get us easily flowing through here.
Yeah, don't you love it? I mean, Men in Black, that was one of my favorite ones. And Encounters of a Third Kind, those are great, great pictures. And I think you're right. I think that a lot of times Hollywood gets a bad rap. And I think they are letting the information out. If you watch Fast Walker, some of our guys say that some of that is definitely occurring. And we got to give them a big thank to them because they can't come out publicly and say that. Otherwise, they'll probably get attacked, yeah.
Yeah, but could it also be like some of our military leaking out the information to Hollywood as well?
Absolutely. Yeah, and it's happening. It's leaking like a sieve. It's coming out like gangbusters. Just go up the internet and get Dr. Greer's press conference. It's on the internet. It's on Google for free. And look at the testimony. There's about an hour, hour and a half of his top witnesses. He's got 400 or 600 people, military, civilian, who are just standing up there and publicly disclosing the facts. And yet information's out there, people. You just got to look for it.
Okay, thanks for the call. Appreciate it.
Thank you, friend.
Next up, east of the Rockies. It's your turn on Coast to Coast. Hi there.
Hi, this is Jimmy from Brooklyn, New York. Enjoying the show.
Hi, Jimmy. Thank you.
There's a highly organized movement for world government. And in order to convince enough people to support world government, you have to prove to people or convince people that there are global problems requiring global solutions. Now, I'm not saying that that's what your guests are doing, but there is a highly organized movement. And one of the things I have here in my hand, it's too late to be reading it. I know your show's running late. But I have the 27th Congress, Communist Party of the Soviet Union, and they're talking exactly about this type of thing. Global pollution, global problems require global agreements, and they hint very strongly at world government. And I think that's a frightening, very frightening thought. Our big solution to the pollution problem should be nuclear power in America.
There's some power sources that are so superior to nuclear power. That maybe that was an interim step, but
Take a look at Elliot Maynard's book, Transforming the Global Biosphere, 12 Futuristic Strategies. He's got some nice, simple steps that you take to change the condition. There's new solar technology, nanotechnology, where you actually can paint the surface like on our ship. We'll actually have solar cell technology. It's there, my friend. And we don't have to depend on nuclear. Nuclear's fine, but we're past that. Let's disclose. Let's get the truth out. Let's quit spending all this money for oil that we don't need. This stuff has been around for years.
Hey, Robert, did they ever talk about new technologies or new treatments in medicine and health that they could help us with?
Absolutely. This is just the tip of the iceberg. Step one is Fast Walkers, the health. Go on the very, very soon on the Safe Space Project website, which is on your site. We're going to have a section on health. We're going to have films and documentaries and information on that. There are solutions, absolutely, especially on health.
Well, you know, what I find fascinating about all of this, honestly, is the fact that so many incredible people with from academia, from government, who are sticking their necks out to talk about subjects like this. I mean,
they're not running anymore. We've got to do it now. We can't let it continue. Otherwise,
now, what do you mean? What do you mean we're in trouble though? What do you mean we're in trouble?
Well, we're going to take the hit if we don't change the condition. This planet is going to hit major, major catastrophes. We're going to lose like half the population. We're going to lose our level of civilization. We're going to go back to the Stone Age and beyond. It's happened before. Zachariah Sitchin talks about it, in his books. You've had Zachariah Sitchin on,
mm-hmm.
I'm sure.
Yes,
but our intention has to change this. We have to do it. I mean, this has to be grassroots. Has to be across the board. We can change it, but only if we act now.
Next up, let's go to our wild card line. You're on the air with us. Hello.
Hi, George.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's good to talk to you. Hi, Robert. How are you doing?
I'm doing good. Who's this?
This is Dave from Vancouver, Canada. Yeah, I just wanted to ask you, you mentioned Richard earlier in the show, and I was wondering how Mars fits into this picture. There's a lot of amazing, the face on Mars, and I just found a rover picture with some amazing stuff in the background of the St. Mary's area of the Cape St. Mary's of the Victoria Crater.
Yeah, it is strange, isn't it?
Yeah, it's just amazing stuff. And did they talk to you, these EBEs? Did they tell you, like, you had to go past Mars to get to Jupiter? I mean, like, did they talk about the asteroid belt? Was that the planet Sitchin was talking about? Or what's happening there? Did they mention Mars? How does it fit in?
You know, I didn't get a tour of Mars, but I wouldn't be surprised if some of the other people out there have. And I know Alfred Weber's very, very knowledgeable about that subject, and I also know Richard Hoagland is incredibly knowledgeable about that subject. There's a lot of good information out there. You bet.
We've got a guest that comes on every once in a while, Robert. Riley Martin is his name, and he claims that he was picked up as a boy. And he is still picked up, and he's taken to Saturn. Well, everybody laughed at him, except one day he talked about how there's a spaceship that goes around Saturn. And I got to tell you, when I think it was Cassini was out that way taking pictures, it took a picture of what looked like an object or a craft flying around Saturn. It was weird.
Adamski's shots are just amazing. And, you know, a lot of people have tried to discredit them, but, they're gorgeous. And, hey, I just got to take a second and thank the great team up here at White Mountain Radio.
Go for it. I got a minute to go. It's all yours.
KVWM 970 AM, KDJI 1270 AM, News Talk Radio on the 70s, Jim, my board guy at Quala Writer, and the wonderful people that had the premiere, the Sholo Chamber, Barbara Bruce, and all the great people that Jerry and Teddy. They had us at the premiere. They actually let us, they bumped a Hollywood movie, let us have our premiere, and I just want to thank them. We came in second against these Hollywood guys. We didn't even have a trailer. Don't be afraid to ask for this movie out there. Get it on the big screen. Let's go, you guys.
Very good. Robert, thanks for the enlightening hour and the entire show. As a matter of fact, appreciate you being on the program.
Hey, George, thank you, and I would love to get an interview of you, my friend,
I'm there.
And post it on Fast Walkers.
All right, you just work it out with Tommy, and we'll set it up. For Dan Galante, Wayne Roberts, Steve Carr, Tom Danheiser, Lisa Lyon, Lex Lonehood, Sean LaDesour, Ross Mitchell, Ian Punnett, and Art Bell, I'm George Norrie, somewhere out there on Coast to Coast AM. We'll see you on our next edition. I'll see you live on New Year's night. Until then, be safe, everyone.